Okay, we continue our meeting with annual improvements, paper 13.
Agenda papers 13A to 13E provide a summary of the comments received on five proposed amendments to four standards, IFRS 5, IFRS 7, IS 19, and IS 34. These amendments were included in the exposure draft of annual improvements to IFRS's 2012-2014 cycle in December 2013. The comment period ended on the 13th of March 2014, and the ISB received 64 comment letters. The purpose of this session is to present to the ISB the Interpretations Committee's recommendations on the proposed amendments on the basis of the comments received, and to obtain the ISB's decision on the finalization of these amendments. Agenda paper 13F presents the proposed wording for the final amendments, and it shows the changes that we have made from the bound volume. So I'm going to start with agenda paper 13A. Is an amendment to IFRS 5, changes in methods of disposal. As mentioned, this paper includes an analysis of the comment letters received. This amendment clarifies the accounting for a change in a disposal plan from held for sale to held for distribution, and also provides guidance in IFRS 5 for the discontinuation of held for distribution accounting. There was general support on the proposed amendment, but about half of the respondents asked the ISB to make some further clarifications on the following topics: whether the date of classification of a sale changes when there is a change from held for sale to held for distribution, the accounting for the difference that may exist between fair value less cost to sale and fair value less cost to distribute, and the meaning of direct reclassification from held for sale to held for distribution, or vice versa. So the Interpretations Committee agreed that all these points could be clarified in the drafting of the proposed amendment, and having addressed these concerns raised, the committee recommends to the ISB that we should finalize the amendment to IFRS 5. So we are asking the ISB if it agrees with the recommendations from the Interpretations Committee, and if it agrees to finalize this amendment on IFRS 5.
Yep. Any objections? No objections. So agreed.
16 in favor. Yep.
Agenda paper 13B is looking at whether a servicing contract is in the scope of the transferred assets disclosure requirements of IFRS 7. The annual improvements ED proposed clarifying that the description of continuing involvement for the purpose of these disclosure requirements in IFRS 7 should be applied to servicing contracts. After considering an analysis of the comments on the proposal in the ED, the Interpretations Committee has recommended that the ISB finalise the proposed amendment, but subject to making two revisions. The first suggested revision is to delete the sentence in the proposed new application guidance that states that the right to earn a fee for financing for servicing the financial asset is generally continuing involvement for the purposes of the transfer disclosures. Removing this presumption that servicing contracts are continuing involvement emphasises that an entity should assess a servicing contract against the description of continuing involvement in IFRS 7. We believe this would more accurately reflect the intention of the proposed amendment. The second suggested revision is to clarify in the basis for conclusions that the term continuing involvement in IFRS 7 is used in a different way from that term that's used in IFRS 9 or IS 39. So the question for the board is whether you agree with the Interpretation Committee's recommendation to finalise this proposed amendment to IFRS 7 with those two revisions I've just described.
Hannah, I'm in general support of the spirit which you're trying to take this.
Sort of spirit, so it means you disagree.
But I'm not in agreement with the mechanics that you're applying here, the surgery. I would prefer, frankly, not to strike the sentence that you're proposing to strike and to eliminate this rebuttable presumption. However, I can actually live with that. But one of the things I'm concerned with is that we are shifting the burden to assessing whether or not you have to make this disclosure on an analysis of continuing involvement involving a servicing fee that is variable. So if you go to the language in paper 13F in the proposed new paragraph B30A, it uses a phrase, for example, a servicer will have continuing involvement in the transferred financial asset for the purposes of the disclosure requirement if the servicing fee is dependent on the amount or timing of the cash flows collected from the transferred financial asset. I see that being somewhat in conflict with the broad principle being stated in 42C, which we're not eliminating, which says that you have continuing involvement if the reporting entity obtains any new contractual rights or obligations related to the transfer financial asset. It is silent on whether or not your fee is variable or fixed. In addition, I think it's implied in B30, where we say the converse, meaning when something is not continuing involvement, we say when an entity does not have continuing involvement in a transferred financial asset, if it has neither an interest in the future performance of the transferred financial asset, nor responsibility under any circumstances to make payments. Well, the inverse of that, obviously, is if you have a financial interest in the future performance, then presumably you have continuing involvement. That's the conclusion I would reach. And I wouldn't limit it to just when the situation is dependent on the amount or timing of cash flows. Why am I concerned about this? This is a financial crisis-related disclosure. The board spent a lot of time on this when we developed IFRS 10 and 12. And my concern is the proposal invites structuring of servicing arrangements such that you would essentially allow yourself to be carved out or scoped out of the disclosure, which I would prefer not to happen. So that's the reason why I'm standing on ceremony, so to speak, here. And I think the words are going to be very important here. And I think we should make it essentially consistent with the notion of any kind of fee arrangement represents continuing involvement, not whether it depends on the performance of the assets or not. Okay. Because if I structure it as a fixed fee arrangement and then have a responsibility, for example, to replace receivables in a securitization structure, that's continuing involvement, but yet it wouldn't meet the definition as I read it strictly here.
Anna, you would, or Michael?
I was just going to say, so the paragraph, the sentence you highlighted in B30A, which is the example,
right?
Would you agree that that is nonetheless consistent with the sentence that you highlighted in B30? It is just a subset of that.
B30A is a subset of B30.
Okay. Yeah. So, and what you were just describing was a fixed fee arrangement you felt should also get caught.
Any compensation, right, for the in the transferred financial assets, to my mind, is continuing involvement.
And that's where we took a different view.
I know. And I think that's inconsistent with what the board was trying to achieve when it wrote this. It's not trying to invite structuring around how I can transfer the asset, make money, but yet avoid the disclosure. It's if I'm making money off these transferred financial assets, I should continue to provide a disclosure. And you've written it in a way to allow somebody to structure around that disclosure.
I think I partly agree and partly disagree with Pat, I think, but I'll be looking to some board members who were actually involved in the debate at the time to chip in, because I wasn't involved in this project at the time.
Before you leave? So
yeah. She's not the only one. She's not the only one. But I certainly, the first question that came to us for clarification was whether or not servicing arrangements were meant to be captured. And there'd been a view that had developed in the market, at least from some, that never meant that servicing arrangements would be in the scope of the disclosures as long as they were market-based fees. So the first thing we've tried to do was to clarify, no, that wasn't what was meant. You needed to look at this concept of continuing involvement. And if you were still exposed to the risk of performance, essentially, as part of that servicing fee, then you would be in the scope. And so we wanted to clarify that and make it clear that, for example, So typically we would think all servicing arrangements would be captured, because typically we understand they do give you some exposure to the performance of the assets to make you incentivized to do a good job, which was why we went so far as to actually say effectively we assume that that's going to be the case, and that's the discussion we had at the time. Now, I agree with Pat in the sense that if it's papered as a fixed fee, but the reality is that you're not going to get a fixed fee if the assets don't perform, because, for example, you're reliant on the pool of assets to pay the fee, and if they don't pay, you're not going to get paid. The fact you've called it a fixed fee doesn't get you out of there, so I certainly agree with that. But this is where I hand over, hopefully, to Pat or McConnell or others. I didn't think that the board necessarily thought that just because you get a fee, even if it's unrelated from the performance of the assets, you are necessarily in the scope. Now, the reason why I'm not completely opposed to what Pat Finnegan is saying is because I think in substance, the situations where you get paid irrespective of the performance of the asset is going to be pretty rare. But if in theory that existed and you were going to get a fee that didn't vary in any way irrespective of the performance of the asset, I'm not sure that the board intended that was continuing involvement and therefore didn't intend that disclosures would be required.
I agree with you.
I see Patricia nodding.
Yeah, I agree too. I mean, there were some of us on the board that shared Pat's view that it didn't matter if you owned the assets and now you sold them to somebody else and you're servicing them, that was continuing involvement. It didn't matter how you were getting paid. But that wasn't the cut that the board made.
How do you know that? Where are the words that demonstrate that?
Well, to me, it's in 30B, the sentence before the new sentence. It says, an entity does not have continuing involvement in a transferred asset if it has neither an interest in the future performance of the transferred financial asset nor a responsibility under any circumstances to make payments in respect of the transferred financial assets in the future.
The inverse of that would imply that if they have that,
And that's what Sue just said.
Fixed or variable, though.
But and she said if it was a fixed fee, paper, or if it was a variable fee papered as a fixed fee, it should be captured by this. But if it's a fixed fee that you're going to get, regardless of whether there's any assets there or how large the pool of assets is, if you're going to get X number of dollars every quarter for servicing, regardless of how many assets are there, no assets, you still get it, then you don't have continuing involvement.
Wouldn't you worry in that scenario, Pat, that if they structure it that way, okay, and then they have a responsibility to replace defaulted receivables?
But that's the other part of that. That's for a responsibility to make payments in respect to the transferred financial assets in the future. That's the second part.
Some people might not interpret those words to mean that. And that's what I think you're inviting, kind of a structuring and an interpretation here that's unnecessary. We're muddying the water. Because further on down, it says below this sentence in 30A, it says, similarly, a fixed fee that is not paid in full because of non-performance of transferred financial asset will also lead to conclusion that the servicer has continuing involvement for the purposes of disclosure requirements.
That's exposed to risk.
So what I'm saying is I don't think we need this language here. It should be just very clear from the statement that we had originally that you're pulling out that if you have a fee of any kind, you essentially have continuing involvement.
A fee whose collection depends upon the performance of the assets?
I would say if
any
time.
Just a fee.
He just wants any fee.
Yeah, because I don't want to have to decide what it's for, what it's not. If I'm making money from transfer financial assets,
not for, but who's paying? Whether it's dependent, you know, if it's paid from the pool of assets, whether it's fixed or variable, you're always got a collection risk. If it's paid by a third party, then you aren't relying on the performance of the assets.
I think ultimately you're worried about form problems.
Well, that too, and I think Mary's suggestion is inviting.
It's not a suggestion, it's a question.
A question. Well, that would invite form problems, in my opinion. Just having another party pay it is not the solution. I think where we had it was just fine. What we exposed was just fine. This is gamesmanship. This is being cute.
But what we exposed didn't say all fees are in.
It said generally, so it's still left open
Okay, I can live with that. I can live with that.
But the positions that it left open were the ones that we have gone on to describe here, or the inverse of what we've described here. So, in other words, fixed fee, not dependent at all in any way, whether amount or timing, on the performance of the asset.
And that's where I think we're going to invite structuring, and I don't think it was consistent with the spirit of what the board was looking for.
Mary?
What? Michael, presumably you took the feedback from the comment letters to the interpretation committee, and that was considered by them as part of their recommendation to us to finalize it as change. Could you give us a bit more flavor of how the interpretation committee, you know, weighed this? Because rather than us redebating it as if we are the first people to, you know, to approach this feedback and the evaluation, I think I'd rather build on what the interpretation committee did.
Well, the comments that we had received, in which the committee discussed, were about the fact that we had this sentence generally, receipt of a fee for servicing would be considered to be continuing involvement, and they noted that that was effectively a presumption that was unnecessary because we've already got the guidance in the standard about you treat it as continuing involvement if you've got an interest in the future performance of the assets. So this was an unnecessary presumption that if anything was going to be distracting or not helpful.
So that was the interpretation committee's conclusion after considering the comment letter.
That's right.
On this.
Can I see if we can agree with the IFRIC recommendation?
15 in favour.
Leonardo.
Thank you. Agenda paper 13C is about the proposal to amend paragraph 44R of IFRS 7 to clarify that the offsetting disclosures required by the amendment to IFRS 7 are not required for all interim periods. These disclosures are given in condensed interim financial statements only when they are required by IAS 34. Almost all the respondents to the exposure draft agreed with this proposal. The Interpretation Committee recommended to the ISB that it should finalize the proposed amendment as exposed. The Interpretation Committee also recommended to the ISB that it should delete the last sentence of paragraph BC7 of the exposure draft, because it's not necessary and could be read as implying a level of disclosure almost as extensive as that required in annual financial statements. The sentence recommended to be deleted is in paragraph 9 of the paper. In page 4 of the paper, we ask the ISB two questions. The first one is whether the ISB agreed to finalize in the annual improvement project the amendment to paragraph 44R of IFRS 7. And the second one is whether the ISB agrees to delete the last sentence of paragraph BC7 of the exposure draft.
Any objections?
I agree with the answer to question, or question one, I agree, yes. Question two, I don't, because that sentence that you're proposing to strike is literally in IS 34, and all you're doing is emphasizing it. It's not introducing any new language. It's just emphasizing the principle in IS 34. So I don't think, in light of the fact that we're trying to clarify what the purpose of this disclosure is, I think it actually is appropriate to introduce from paragraph 25 of IS 34.
I agree with Pat that at the time when the board decided to make this or to propose this clarification as a result of the question that had come up about what the transition paragraph meant, I didn't think it was that easy a decision for the board, because some felt very strongly that in an ideal world we would have wanted these requirements in the interim standards, which was why we'd had the wording in the first place, but we conceded that we couldn't really do it the way that we had. And I thought at the time that the reason the board got comfortable with proposing the change was by clarifying or sort of emphasising this concept in IAS 34. So I thought it was quite an important part of the package for the board in terms of the clarification. And even though I wasn't on the board at that time, I agreed with that assessment at the time, because I think it was quite a big deal that we didn't have a a specific requirement to put it in the interims, particularly when the FASB actually did require it, and that this at least gave us some comfort as a reminder to people to think about it when it should be provided. Just based on the principles in 34, but emphasising them in this context. In a sense, that was a compromise that got the board comfortable to provide this clarification.
So, you would also not want to delete that sentence?
No, I'm happy with one, but not two.
So can I see who is happy with one?
16 in favour.
Yeah, and can I see who shares Pat and Sue's unhappiness with the deletion?
Voting against.
Eleven against.
Yes. Okay.
11.
Yeah.
11.
All right. Again, Leonardo.
Yes. Paper 13B. This paper is about the proposal to amend paragraph 83 of ICE 19 to clarify that the depth of the market for high-quality corporate bonds should be assessed at the currency level. Many respondents to the exposure draft have concern about this proposal. In particular, some are worried about the potential effects of the proposed amendment on countries that have adopted a stronger currency as their official currency, without being members of a regional market with a common currency. They think that the proposed amendment could result in anomalous outcomes in these countries, because a discount rate determined on high-quality corporate bonds denominated in a strong currency could be inconsistent with the inflation rate and other assumptions used in these countries to determine the cost of providing post-employment benefits. They note that according to paragraph 75 of ICE 19, actuarial assumptions shall be mutually compatible. Consequently, those respondents suggest that before finalizing the amendment, the ISB should perform further analysis to ensure that there are no unintended consequences. The Interpretation Committee recommended to the ISB that it should finalize the proposed amendment to ICE 19 as proposed and without performing further analysis on this issue, because this additional analysis will delay the finalization of the proposed amendment without providing any real benefits or any new useful information. We also understand that the majority of the Interpretation Committee members do not see a real difference between a country that has adopted another currency and a country that is part of a regional market that shares the same currency. This is because a particular country within a currency zone is likely to experience economic characteristics that are different from other countries in the same currency zone. The Interpretation Committee also recommended that the amendments should be applied from the beginning of the earliest comparative period presented in the first financial statement in which the entity applies the amendment, with any cumulative catch-up adjustment recognized in the opening retained earnings. This is because a full retrospective application of the amendment, as proposed in the exposure draft, can be burdensome for some entities. In page 5 of the paper, we ask the ISB two questions. The first one is whether the ISB agrees to finalize in the annual improvement project the amendment to paragraph 83 of ICE 19, as proposed and without performing further analysis on this issue. The second question is whether the ISB agrees with the recommended transitional provision.
Agree. Okay.
16 in favour.
I'm not going to send anything back to you. Yeah, be despondent. I'm not trying to provoke this. Denise.
Yes. Agenda paper 13A includes an analysis of the comment letter that we received on the proposal to amend I-34. This amendment clarifies the meaning of disclosure of information elsewhere in the interim financial report and requires the inclusion of cross-reference from the interim financial statements to the location of this information. One-third of the respondents agreed with the proposed amendment, but the remaining two-thirds of the respondents conditionally agreed or disagreed with the proposed amendments. Among the concerns raised are that the proposed amendment is too broad and or is not necessary. In this respect, the Interpretations Committee concluded that the amendment is sufficiently narrow and is needed to eliminate the ambiguity that exists in determining whether some information can be presented or not outside the financial statements. Some respondents also thought that the ISB should clarify the meaning of interim financial report. The Interpretations Committee thought that it was not necessary because the definition of interim financial report is clear in IS 34. And also some respondents thought that the ISB should clarify in the drafting of paragraph 16A the meaning of on the same terms as the interim financial statements and at the same time. In this respect, the Interpretations Committee thought that only the meaning of on the same terms could be clarified as on the same basis as the financial statements. So having addressed the concerns raised, the Interpretations Committee proposes to go ahead with the amendment to IS 34, and we are asking the ISB whether he agrees with this recommendation.
In favour?
Yes.
Yep.
Okay.